will they go to the person that they have aught against. Whereas if their motive was to win their brother, they would go to the brother and to him alone in order to win him. Oh, that's the spirit of wise rulership, isn't it? You see, kings have got to learn how to handle issues properly. Now, you see how that leads on to the next section in Proverbs chapter 25, so naturally and beautifully, because you see verses 11 to 15, we've entitled that The Need to Find the Right Approach. Now look at the key words. Look how they jump out of the text now. Verse 11, a word fitly spoken. Verse 12, a wise reprover. Verse 13, a faithful messenger. Verse 15, a soft tongue. You see, these are all the principles of those who have learned the right approach to handle issues. And the spirit of every one of these verses is finding the right approach for the particular circumstance that is involved. Verse 11 says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. Actually, I think that's similar to Proverbs 15. If you come back to chapter 15 for a moment and to the 23rd verse, it's the same spirit really as this verse, isn't it? What's a word fitly spoken? Well, isn't it the word of Proverbs 15 verse 23? A man hath joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. Isn't that the fitly spoken word of Proverbs 25, verse 11? Now you see, therefore the spirit of verse 11 is the right word in the right place at the right time. Wise kings learn to do that, you see. Because they are always interested in securing the best result. And I think the lesson of these verses is that, you see, it's the result that's important. And therefore, if you believe that you're right on an issue in life, right on an issue in the truth, you also have a responsibility to find the right approach, so that you can secure the right result. It's not enough to simply be right on the matter. We must also be correct in the spirit of our approach. And therefore the fitly spoken word of verse 11 shows the fruits of tried faith in the setting of redemption. That's the objective of it all. Verse 12, as an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, so is a wise reprover upon an obedient ear. Now, of course, it does say here that the ear is obedient, and we're going to come later on in our studies to the spirit of learning to accept rebuke. But you notice that the idea in verse 12 here is not on the spirit so much of the person who accepts rebuke, although their ear is obedient, but on learning to be a wise reprover. You know, it's terribly hard to give wise reproof, isn't it? It demands wisdom and tact and humility of spirit in order for wise reproof to be given. But, says the proverb, if it can be done, why, it's like an ornament of fine gold. Those who've learnt the secret of being able to administer wise reproof are like those who have ornaments of fine gold. You see, again, what we're saying is there's an objective to the reproof, isn't it? And the objective is best secured by the right approach. It's the style of the words that are employed. Verse 13, as the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refresheth the soul of his masters. So he's a faithful messenger, not just a messenger. You see, the responsibility of a messenger is to speak the truth. That's the idea behind faithful, isn't it? That he must speak the truth. That he must be a faithful and proper representation of the spirit of his master. He'll only refresh the soul of his masters if he's faithfully delivered the message that his master wishes him to deliver. And in order to secure the right result, the results, the message must be faithful. We've all heard about the dangers of messages being blurred along the way. You know, remember the famous one, send reinforcements, we're going to advance, was the cry at the front of the army, and by the time it got to the back it was, send three and fourpence, we're going to advance. And somewhere in the middle the message got lost. You see, these are faithful messengers. And the reason why the soul of the master is refreshed is because the message is faithfully carried wherever it is so that the right result may be achieved. Of course, by way of contrast with that, look at the man of verse 14. The one who boasts himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain. The word gift here, by the way, means a present, not a talent, not a talent that the person has. I'm not saying that he's a gifted person, but the man who boasts himself of a false present. The Revised Standard Version says, a man who boasts of a gift he does not give. And there are some like that with regard to their words. They have all the appearance. All the sound is right, the noise is right, but somehow the substance isn't there. It's a gift that never really materializes. Well, kings can't use those sorts of people, and he can't use that sort of approach. That never ever does really resolve differences. Just the right noise, without the right substance of words, is not actually a good way to handle issues. But verse 15 is. Because verse 15 says, by long forbearing is a prince persuaded, and a soft tongue breaketh the bone. So you see, this is the spirit of quiet persistence, isn't it? A refusal to be provoked. This is the lesson that a gentle and tactful approach will often achieve a result that a heated argument could never achieve. Now, Wycliffe made an interesting observation on this proverb when he said, the tongue breaketh bones, though itself has none. It's a paradox, isn't it? And isn't there another similar proverb? What's the similar proverb to this? Not a soft tongue that breaketh the bone, but a soft answer turneth away, or we say wrath in New Zealand. Wrath, my English friends here. Turneth away anger. But the effect's the same, isn't it? So, you see, what's the lesson of verses 11 to 15? The lesson is the same throughout. That in each case, the object of the message is achieved because of the right approach taken. That's the key, isn't it? Wise rulers learn to find the right approach that will best handle the issues of life. Now, we're running short of time, but I thought we might just try and skip into the next section. I'll just tiptoe through two or three proverbs so that you can see the counterpart. Because, you see, I think verses 16 to 28 is now a section about the things that we've got to avoid, those things that don't help, those things that will not resolve issues. It's all the negative things to be avoided. And, well, you can see them all here. Look, let me just summarize them for you. Verse 16, the indulgent person. Verse 17, the smothering neighbor. Verse 18, the false witness. Verse 19, the unfaithful man. Verse 20, the thoughtless friend. Verse 23, the slanderous tongue. Verse 24, the scolding woman. Verse 26, the compromising spirit. Verse 27, the self-seeking person. Verse 28, the unrestrained person. These are all they who cannot resolve issues, who will never find the right way so that differences can be properly handled for the good of the kingdom. And wise rulers learn that none of these methods will in fact work. Let's look at just two or three of them by way of illustration. Verse 18, a man that bears false witness against his neighbor. You know, that was actually the ninth commandment of the Ten Commandments, wasn't it? Thou shalt not bear false witness. It's extensively dealt with in the book of Proverbs. And obviously, from the number of times it's mentioned in the book of Proverbs, it's clear that it's a spirit that we are all susceptible to. You know what the spirit of verse 18 is? It's the spirit of character defamation. Defaming the character of others. And the lesson of this verse is that it may be very satisfying to the flesh to be able to hit a brother over the head with a maul or a sword or a sharp arrow. I think, by the way, there's a progression of thought there. You see, what happens is when you bear false witness against a brother, you start off with a concocted story, and you start off by hitting him with a maul. And that's good, that feels really good, but it's not enough. And so then you get out a sword, and away you go, slash, slash, cut, cut. And before you know it, you've got so enthused with defaming his character that finally you get a sharp arrow and stab him to the heart, and it's all over, and he's gone. You've killed him. It's a sort of terrible thing that grows from within, the bearing of false witness against our neighbour. And the lesson in that verse is that we can never solve problems that way. That'll never resolve differences in ecclesial life, will it? The spirit of defaming the character of others. What about the man of verse 20? The tactless friend. As he that taketh away a garment in cold weather, and as vinegar upon nitre, so is he that singeth songs to an heavy heart. You see the phrase, vinegar upon nitre. In the Septuagint version, that reads, the word nitre reads as the word, well, it's actually in the Hebrew, the word scab, instead of the word nitre. So that what we've got in verse 20 is the man that takes away the garment in cold weather, the man that pours vinegar upon a scab, and the man that sings songs to the heavy heart. So what's the spirit of all of those? So here's a person that says, I'm feeling, you know, it's actually a winter's day, and I'm feeling hot, I'm feeling feverish. Well, that's all right, we'll take all your outer clothes off. We need to get rid of all these garments, but it's a cold day. There's obviously something else that's the problem. That's not the right solution, is it? Here's a person with a wound. He says, my wound's dry. Well, we'll pour a bit of vinegar on it then. We'll give it moisture. Ever tried to pour vinegar on a wound? Or the person who's just had a dear family member depart, they're dead. They've just been to the funeral, they're sitting at home in the depths of despair, and in comes the friend. Or, you're feeling a bit, we need a bit of bright music, that's what we need, cheer everybody up. These aren't the answers, are they? Problems are never solved or difficulties overcome by thoughtless, tactless solutions. It's not the answer. We'll never resolve differences by these sorts of silly things that have no real and proper thought behind them. What about verse 23? The north wind driveth away rain, so doth an angry countenance a backbiting tongue. And by the way, I think the margin is correct, because really the Hebrew should read that the north wind bringeth forth rain. It's the exact opposite to what the authorized version says. The Hebrew word means to bring forth, not to drive away. And so Moffat translates the phrase, and I think rightly so, north winds bring rain, slander, angry looks. That's what slander does, that's what the backbiting tongue does. It brings forth angry looks. And so you see, this is the spirit of the one who loves to do injury to others. You see, this person has not learned the right way to get on with people. And the lesson of verse 23 is that issues can never be resolved by the backbiting tongue in ecclesial life. No, we'll never handle problems that way. What about verse 26? A righteous man falling down before the wicked is as a troubled fountain and a corrupt spring. A righteous man falling down before the wicked. Now, do you know that chapter 10 of Proverbs and verse 11 says that the mouth of the righteous man is a well of life. The mouth of the righteous man is a well of life. But you see what this righteous man has done in verse 26. He falls down before the wicked. Moffat says he yields. Revised Standard Version says he gives way. You see, this is the person who knows the truth and who knows the right principles of the truth, but they have no strength of character to stand for the truth at the right time. They give way to the wicked. You know, wells were terribly important in ancient biblical times, weren't they? Remember the story of Genesis 26, as Isaac moves from place to place and they digged a well and they strove with the Philistines concerning that well and they digged another well. You see, a well was the source of life to people. And you see, the great danger of this particular well in this particular verse is that the purity of the water has been defiled. It will now corrupt others who drink from it. The name is still there. The spring still flows. The person still reassures. He appears to be a righteous man, but there's poison in the water. And all who now drink from this particular well will be infected. And the lesson of the verse is that issues and problems in life cannot be resolved by compromise with evil. You can't do that. That's not the way. That's not the right approach. And finally, verse 28, which says, he that hath no rule over his own city, or sorry, he that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. You see that word rule there? Most translations would render the word as self-control. He that has no self-control. You see, the person that lacks self-control becomes an easy prey to the enemy. They yield at the first assault on their feelings. There's no restraining walls in their life. So the lesson of the verse is that perhaps more than anything else, above anything else, that the closing thought of this chapter is that self-discipline is the key to the successful handling of all issues. Because you see, the person that's learned self-discipline, he's the one who has the ability to resist temptation. And he's the one who is able to endure provocation. And therefore, that will lead to a better outcome when problems arise. So these are the principles that kings learn, so that they might handle the issues of life for the goodwill of all their people and for the benefit of the kingdom. That spirit, brothers and sisters, of wisdom, enshrined and ennobled by the teaching of our Lord himself in the words of these proverbs, debate thy cause with thy neighbour himself.